Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.
This is Kevin Brooker. Welcome to Cruising Through Retirement. You know, a common question for most advisors is, how much do I need to retire? And the answer is not always just about money. So on today's show, we're going to talk about some non-financial questions that might help you find the answer you're looking for.
Cruising Through Retirement with Kevin Brooker. Kevin is an investment advisor representative with more than 30 years experience. He's helped thousands of people cruise through retirement, and he'd be happy to help you too. Stick around for today's adventure on Cruising Through Retirement.
This is Kevin Brooker. Welcome to Cruising Through Retirement. You know, a common question for most advisors is, how much do I need to retire? And the answer is not always just about money. So on today's show, we're going to talk about some non-financial questions that might help you find the answer you're looking for.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. This is Cruising Through Retirement. I'm consumer advocate Steve Siddall. Kevin Brooker is here, of course, as always. Kevin, a fiduciary, investment advisor, representative. Silverleaf Financial, of course, is where you find him, helping folks for more than 30 years getting to and through retirement. He's also an author. He wrote the book called The Millionaire's Guide to Tax-Free Money for Long-Term Care. You can get your copy for free by visiting silverleaffinancial.com. Silverleaffinancial.com. And, hi, Kevin. How's it going?
It is going very well, Steve. Always good to be here. It's better here than it has been for some of these banks these days.
Well, we got to touch on that, I think, Kevin. I mean, here it is, this SVB. I mean, we've been talking about it for a week, and then it just kind of came to a head over the weekend. And holy cow, what do you think? Walk me through it.
It is crazy. And the first thing I want to say is, folks, I don't believe, this is not the beginning of a massive banking crisis. Silicon Valley Bank, we call it SVB. As of course you can tell, it's based in Silicon Valley in California. I believe there was really a unique situation because most of the clients were these tech and venture capital companies. And for those of you that follow this sort of thing, venture capital is the money that goes into, it's a seed money that goes into companies that are in the very, very early stages. So this is before they've come public, before they start to trade on the stock market. They're raising money from very rich people, which we call venture capitalists, and they give them the seed money that allows them to grow before, at a later stage they would go public. And the thing is, with these venture capital, these are very, very young companies. So think of these people that are in their 20s, and the venture company throws $10 million to them. Well, what SVB did is they offered the clients, these venture capital clients, they offered them higher rates on deposits so that they could entice them to keep their money there. But at the same time, they had agreements, they call them covenants, that required them to keep them there. So the venture capital company would say, you've got to keep this money at SVB. And so they were paying higher rates to attract deposits. And the way they were doing it is they were going on and paying the higher deposits. But in order to do that, they had to go out and buy much longer term, higher yielding bonds, U.S. Treasuries. And they did this before the government started raising interest rates. So when the Fed began aggressively hiking rates, they did not manage the risk. That's the key here. Their risk management protocols failed. All right. And if one more person tells me that they blame the Fed for this, I'm just going to lose my mind. All right. Because in my mind, all right, to me, that's like, okay, I'm going on a cruise and we get in a wreck and the captain blames the ocean for the wreck. Okay.
Okay.
The captain should know how to navigate the rough seas. Okay. It shouldn't be the captain's first time sailing a boat. I expect the captain knows how to navigate these rough seas and knows how to keep us safe. I expect the same thing from my bank and the risk managers that are at the bank. I expect them to know how to manage the risk of rising interest rates. All of us that were paying attention, all right, we knew they were rising, they were going to raise rates. Guys, that was no secret. They made no secret they were going to raise rates. All right. I have not bought long-term bonds for any of my clients for years. In fact, the last several years, the only bonds that I've been recommending are short-term bonds. Because in a rising rate environment, anybody that studied even a little bit of this should know that as interest rates rise, the price goes down, and it has the most dramatic impact on the longest term vehicle. So think about your 30-year treasuries, okay? As interest rates rise, those are the ones that really get crushed. And so what happened, as rates were going up, this bank, SVB, was losing billions of dollars on this portfolio. They were down billions. They were unrealized losses. So they were on paper, but they hadn't sold yet. But then what happened is investors started to hear, some people are saying this is the first bank collapse that was caused by Twitter. Okay.
Really?
And it's because as an individual found out, hey, this bank might be in trouble, they started doing these tweet storms, I guess you call them. So
okay,
all these tweets going all over the place saying, guys, you better get your money out of this bank because I'm hearing they're going to fail. All right. So all of these young people that had, you know, $10 million, $20 million at this bank, they caused a run on the bank, which means they all wanted to withdraw. They all started withdrawing their money at the same time. And so what happened is they all withdrew their money as the portfolio was down. That caused the bank to have to sell. In other words, take those losses on those bonds, and then it just snowballed. So they had to sell more. The withdrawals kept coming in more. They had to sell more. And eventually, they got to the point where they didn't have enough liquidity. And that's when the Fed stepped in and took them over last week. So, but the key here is that this is not how the majority of banks operate. All right. This was a bank that was taking on much more risk than they should have by buying the longer term bonds. And they were heavily concentrated in terms of their client base. The majority of their client base was in this tech and venture capital area, which is a high risk move for a bank. A good diversified bank, just like an individual wants to diversify in stocks and bonds and spread out the risk, a well-managed bank does the same thing. They don't have all of their clients in one industry and not in one geography. They have a very diversified client base from all different sectors, all different industries, all around the world, ideally, so that they can spread out their risk for the bank in terms of risk management profile. So there's several things that went wrong in this situation, but it is unique, and I don't believe there's any risk. I really don't believe there's any risk at all to the big banks. I'm talking about Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. So my suggestion to everybody, if you're fortunate enough that you've got over $250,000, saved, don't keep it at one bank. All right. You can have multiple bank accounts, put $250 at every one of them, and you're fully insured up to the max. And you don't have to worry if it fails. The worst thing that'll happen is you won't be able to access your money for a few days, maybe a week, and then you'll be able to get all your money, but it'll be fully FDIC insured. And so in this case, I actually give the government credit because they stepped in. I think they handled this extremely well. I think this previous Monday, we'd have had another Black Monday, another big market crash, if the Fed did not step in over the weekend and take them over. And then they took over Signature Bank as well on Sunday. And this bank was also unique in that it was big in the crypto space, cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. And so they took them over the weekend. And that is what kept us from having a massive meltdown in the stock market on Monday. The Fed should be congratulated. The regulators should be congratulated, in my opinion here, because I think they did an awesome job of calming down the markets and keeping everything orderly. We didn't see any massive, massive moves one way or the other. Yes, it's been volatile, but nothing like a big market crash like we had in 87.
Well, exactly. And again, I agree with you, Kevin. And that I think that, I mean, I've had a couple of different people talk to me this week, and one of them brought up, you know, what's the George Bailey Christmas movie? Jimmy Stewart. It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what happened. And there's a couple of lines in there where, you know, they say, "I want all my money out of the bank," and Jimmy Stewart says, "Well, you can't. We don't have $7 million here."
That's right. And it is. And what they're saying, and you know, a lot of the other, you know, some of the blame that's going around is based on how fast technology has become, the second somebody heard about it that had money there, he or she immediately sent out these tweets and these messages on social media to the world, right? So then anybody that had money there knew in a matter of seconds, or could have known in a matter of seconds, hey, there's a problem here. That's what caused the run to develop so quickly. You know, in the past, you know, I don't know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, we didn't have the technology like we have now. And this could have only happened through word of mouth or a phone call or something like that. It wouldn't have happened as quickly, right? And so that's part of the problem now is people, you can act so fast, you don't even need to go to the bank, right? You can do it on your cell phone. And so that's part of what caused this big run on the bank, which is simply everybody pulling out their deposits. But that's what, when it happens in a massive, massive way, that's what causes the bank to run out of liquidity. And then the Fed either steps in, or what they had done previous to that is they tried to borrow money. You know, SVB tried to borrow money, but they couldn't do it because who wants to lend them money when you know they're in trouble, right? So it's a bad situation. It's a mess. But you know, some people are taking comfort saying, you know what, these are all a bunch of multimillionaires that potentially could have lost money. And so some people actually don't feel that sorry for them. And everybody up to 250 is insured by FDIC. The government is saying that everybody's insured. Personally, I still have some questions about that because I'm not aware of an agreement amongst all the banks that says they will agree to that, because the banks are the ones that pay the FDIC insurance. So when one bank fails, all the other banks, you know, they're all paying into this insurance pool, if you will. And that's what supports it. It's not taxpayer money, which is the good news. But let's just be very careful is what I would suggest. I would never have more than $250,000 at any bank other than one of the big three, in my view. Being Chase, Wells Fargo, and BofA, Bank of America. So those are the only three that I would even think about having more than 250. But the truth of the matter is, why do you need to do that? Why not just spread it out? So what if you got four or five bank accounts? I mean, good for you. Congratulations. You've done well saving your money. So,
sure.
But spread out that risk.
People have five or six 401ks. What's the difference?
Oh, no question. No question. And you know, the funny thing, a little side note, a lot of times I do the same thing with other investments, Steve. What I do, you know, like for instance, with annuities, I like to spread those out. If somebody, it's the same thing. Why take on more carrier risk by having too much money at one institution? I would never recommend anybody that I ever even thought had any problems. But my point is, we can't see them coming, right? You can't see 2 years, 3 years down the road what might happen. So the way you protect yourself is just don't exceed those limits to begin with. And it's another move that'll keep you protected and keep you safe. It can mean you have extra bank accounts, extra statements. I've had some clients complain that, you know, they've got so many different accounts to follow. And so I always tell them, I say, you know what, I'll make it simple. I'll just give you a one page summary. I can put like 20 different lines on one page. It's not a problem. So, and you have on one page, you can see where all your money's at.
Sure.
But you know, it's safe.
And it's safe. So what are the lessons from this, Kevin? I mean, I think we have to realize, first of all, you pointed it out so well, and that it's a technology thing. That really is one of the things. But what else can we learn from this?
Well, I think one of the other issues to learn, if you want to dig a little deeper behind the scenes, you know, what they're calling, they call it a asset liability mismatch. And what that means is that they were loaning out money on a short term, giving out money that could be demanded at any point in time. But then when you deposit it, they took and invested in vehicles that are 20 and 30 years in maturity. And so you don't, if you think you might have to, you know, give out or loan out money in a short period of time, it should be lined up and matched with something that's also short term maturity. And I would say the same thing for individuals. It's the same thing. If you've got a bill coming in 6 months, you don't take the money that you're going to use to pay it and put it in something that's locked up for 5 years, right?
Doesn't make
sense. That's an asset. That's a mismatch of your assets and liabilities. If you know you've got a bill coming in 6 months and this is the chunk of the money to do it, then put it in something that's liquid or put it in something that's going to mature in 6 months, and then you've got a perfect match. So that's the other thing they did is they took their assets and they invested them all for too long of a period, thinking that nobody is going to come and that they're not going to get hit with a bunch of withdrawals. And so that's one lesson I would say. The other is that to me, maybe it's a little bit of an inconvenience. I consider it very minor because you can bank on your cell phone, right, these days.
Sure. Yeah, it's easy.
So I suggest just have multiple accounts. You know what? Or talk to me about a brokerage account, because brokerage account, I can invest a brokerage account. I can insure this thing up to $10 million. All right. So you can get a lot higher limits of insurance in some brokerage accounts. I happen to be one of them. The back office that I use is very, very, very strong, and we can get additional insurance if somebody needs it. So be aware that there's other possibilities if you happen to be in that fortunate pool of investors.
So this is sort of a wake up call, I think, for like the venture capitalists and certainly those of us who are on the fringes of, I'm certainly no VC by any stretch, but it is interesting to read about and to watch. And this is a big stumble.
Oh, it is. It is, no question. It's a big stumble. And it also, the other thing, Silicon Valley Bank, they're like, I don't even know how to describe it. They are the institution for young companies, startup companies. They've been doing this for over 40 years.
Well,
in
then
Silicon,
they ought to, why didn't they manage their risk better?
That's the big question. We don't know the answer to that yet. I like it of that the government has stepped in and taken over to make the depositors safe.
Sure.
And I think it's appropriate that shareholders in the common stock, this is the game in the stock market. If you're wrong, you can lose all your money. I don't think stock investors should be made whole at all. I think they should suffer the consequences just like you would enjoy the profits. And I think the bondholders should be out. I think the executives, there are stories about the executives having sold their own stock right before this happened. Okay. In the investment world, we call that front running. All right. In other words, front running is, you know, there's bad news coming and you sell your stock position before the bad news comes out, right? Because you want to sell at a higher price than that, because you know after the news comes out, it's going down. It's similar to insider trading. You have knowledge of a situation and you try to take advantage of it by moving on the shares before the public knows. And so the regulators are investigating this, and I hope they prosecute them. The other issue is they apparently handed out bonuses. They gave out big bonuses to a lot of employees right before this news came out. So I think that also, you know, those all have to be clawed back, and those people should be prosecuted. And I'm hoping that they are. Unfortunately, white collar crime is a lot less. There's a lot less convictions, it seems, than blue collar. But there's clearly some foul play going on here.
It seems like it. But you're right. I think the government did the right thing in terms of entering, for stepping in so quickly. And that's, that really says a lot, I think, in terms of making sure this isn't a bigger problem.
I think it does. Because, well, imagine the scenario in which they did not step in. I do think we'd have had a crash at the beginning of this week. And it would have been ugly. And that would probably made the whole situation a whole lot worse too. Now we are seeing now everybody that anybody that's watching, this has been a terrible week for regional banks, and that what happened is everybody started to look at all the other banks, and for instance, First Republic is one that pops to mind. If you look at this bank this week, oh my goodness, this stock was I want to say $147 the beginning of February, and now I think it's in the 20s. So it's lost essentially 80% of its value in the last, I think in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and so there's been a run on these banks where people, depositors are taking out their money. And what happened with First Republic, which is also considered to be a good bank, strong bank. What happened this week is that they were short on capital and they weren't able to get the money initially that they wanted. And then what I thought was amazing, Steve, is that 11 other banks including Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and down to the smaller ones like Truist Financial and some other ones, 11 other banks deposited $30 billion into First Republic as a sign of confidence and to show everybody, we believe in this bank. This bank is strong enough. We will put our own uninsured deposits, because $30 billion obviously is way over $250,000. All right. So they stepped up, and that was a huge vote of confidence, I thought. And then what a surprise. So initially the stock was down like 20%. This news came out, and then it was up like 10%. And then the following day it went back down again, because I guess people are saying, you know, well, what the heck? Why do you need that money? So it is quite the roller coaster here, guys. But what I would say, I don't believe this is a time you make any drastic moves in your portfolio. I don't believe in making big, making adjustments when we have these erratic moves in the stock market, because a lot of times I think the best thing to do really is do nothing. Okay. And I'm talking about it from an investment standpoint. If you've got more than 250 at a bank, I would reduce that to 250, and I would just open up as many bank accounts as you need, so you don't go over $250,000 at one institution. And that'll keep that risk, you know, taken care of. You're fully insured. All right. But in terms of your investment portfolio, I personally have not made any really adjustments at all to anybody's portfolio because of these things happening. Luckily I have not been an investor in regional bank stocks. Actually I've avoided financials pretty much overall. Luckily I've not been involved in this or haven't had any clients take any losses because of it.
Sure.
So I think it's important that now is a good time to talk to your advisor. Okay. Now is a good time to have a conversation with your advisor. If you have any questions, it's a good time to see what your advisor, you know, hear what your advisor thinks. And guys, if you're doing it by yourself, this is one of the times when it really does help to have somebody else. You can bounce off ideas. I always think two minds are better than one. So I always think it's a good idea to have an advisor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for most of us who, you know, try to save during our lifetime and get to retirement and have a nice retirement, this has zero impact on folks like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And I'll tell you what, guys, the good news is that as interest rates have come up, that's benefiting other financial vehicles. Mm-hmm. And there are safe vehicles out there. I've talked many times about index annuities as being a vehicle that I really like for safe money, safe investing, because you're guaranteed that you can't lose money, right? And I've got some now that are off that you can make almost 20% guaranteed in your first year.
Holy
okay,
God.
Guaranteed.
That's amazing.
I tell you, Steve, I haven't seen numbers like this in at least 15 years. And so, guys, if you're looking for something that's safe, by all means, give me a call. I'd be happy to give you some ideas. If you have lost money in the stock market and you don't have a lot of hope for the market and you wish you could do something different, give me a call, because I can show you how you can make 10, 15, 20% guaranteed. Okay. Guaranteed in your first, and no smoke, no mirrors, right? There's no trick here. All right. This is a contractual guarantee, where you get paid a bonus on your money, putting it in, right? Mm-hmm. And if we go into a fixed interest account, we can make another 4 or 5% in the first year. I'm looking at bonuses between 15 and 18% on day one. And by the way, there's no fee. There's no fee on the policy. All right. So this, and we put it into this contract. You recoup the money. If you're down 10 or 15%, we can recoup it right away, put you into a safe vehicle where you can participate in the market's growth, but you don't lose anything if the market drops. All right. Now, there are, of course, caveats to that, and I can explain all of it. These aren't for everybody, but if you have money that you want to keep safe and you don't need to take out more than, let's say, 5% of it per year, this might be something that's a good fit for you.
Folks, give Kevin a call. It's 800-975-6717, 800-975-6717, or you just visit the website. That's silverleaffinancial.com, silverleaffinancial.com. And, you know, Kevin, I've said this before, but it's so... I just love your insight and just your very pragmatic approach to this. It helps me understand things.
Oh, I really appreciate that, Steve. And I'll tell you, I think sometimes, you know, I really, Although I always try to simplify things sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it can get complicated, you know, because investment vehicles can be complicated. And that's another part of the reason why I think it makes sense to work with somebody that has a lot of experience, that can deal with stocks and bonds and things in the stock and bond markets, but also can deal with guaranteed vehicles that are safe. You know, for instance, if you guys are looking for a bank CD right now, you'll see that bank CDs have come up quite a bit. I've seen some 3% and 4%, but you know what? I can get 5.75 guaranteed on a fixed annuity, plain vanilla, 5.75 guaranteed, no risk, no charges, no expenses, just plain 5.75 guaranteed each year for 5 years. All right. And we've got a Fed meeting coming up again, this coming week, I believe.
Yeah.
And so, most people, this is also a $1 million question though. The expectation was for them to raise rates again, at least a quarter. Some people, like about 2 weeks ago, the market was starting to think they're going to raise another half a point. But with what's happened in the bank, in the regional bank area, a lot of people think that's actually done a lot of the work for the Fed. In other words, bond interest rates have really come down. And so my opinion is they'll probably raise a quarter point because inflation is still higher than they think. So we might actually start to see a 6% guarantee, you know, on some investments. And I had not seen that in a long, long time. So I would recommend that. I recommend a piece of each of these, right? Mm-hmm. So have some money in stocks and bonds, some money in guaranteed fixed interest rates, like I'm referring to 5.75, and some in other vehicles like annuities that you have safety, but you also have good growth potential. And I think if you spread out your assets, your portfolio like that, you'll be very well served.
Sure. 800-975-6717. And again, there's just so many things out there. So many, boy, you talk about, pieces of the puzzle that you got to put together. Whoa, we had to bring out a whole new jigsaw puzzle for this one.
Yeah, we did for sure. For sure we did. And I'll tell you what, you know, something else that's looking interesting to me is actually gold. Okay.
Is it so, really? I mean, we've had discussions about gold before and you've been sort of, yeah, you know, it's okay, but you know, don't count on it.
That's
you're feeling different.
I have typically held a small position in gold, maybe 3-5%. Mm-hmm. But it is really it's been trading better. It's been trading better than the stock market. It is a good hedge. It can be difficult to put a valuation on that. And the reason why a lot of times I'll say I'm not a fan of gold is because there's no earnings, right? There's no revenue. Sure. So it's like, well, how do you put a value on it? What's it really worth? You know, like with a stock, we look at the earnings, the revenue, the market share, you know, do they have a unique product? Are they in a niche? Do they have, you know, we call it, do they have a moat around their business, which means it's hard for competitors to come into their business, you know, or is it just a me too, where everybody and their brother is selling what they're selling? And so there's a lot of things we can look at to come up with a valuation on a stock. Gold, in my opinion, trades more based on emotions, like fear. And so that's why I think gold is interesting right now, because there's a lot of fear in the markets.
Oh gosh, there's yes.
Right? There's a lot of people saying, what do I do? And so I think, you know, for instance, gold has actually been trending higher in these last couple of weeks as these things have taken place. And so to me, I think what's happening is investors are doing exactly that. They're saying, you know what? I'm going to increase my allocation to gold, because, you know, these other things are making me a little bit fearful right now. So the way that I like to do it though, Steve, is through the market. Okay. You can buy gold funds, exchange traded funds. You can buy them on the stock market. So you don't have, like some people will buy gold coins or gold bars, but then you have an issue with storage. You know, how are you going to keep it safe? Are you burying it in your backyard? What exactly, how are you keeping it safe? Cause somebody could take it from you, right?
Yeah.
My suggestion is to avoid those expenses for storage, okay? Because if you don't want to keep it, you got to pay somebody else to keep it safe for you. So, but you can trade. I invest in gold funds that track the price of gold. So if something happens, we need to sell it, you can do it in the blink of an eye whenever the market's open. You don't have to worry about storage. You don't have to worry about safety, but you can still participate in the rise and the fall of gold prices if that's something you're interested in.
So let me ask you this, for a new client, if I'm going to be a new client of yours, are you taking a different approach today than you did, say, 2 years ago?
Actually, no. No,
okay,
I'm not.
Okay, good. That's what I was hoping to hear.
It's okay. Okay, well, good. I'm glad. Because No, I take the same approach. And you know what? Anybody that's listened to me before, I always start off with the same. I start up the same thing in terms of let's figure out. We need to figure out what we call your risk profile. So how much money are you comfortable risking? In other words, having in the stock market, and how much money do you want to keep safe? In other words, you don't want to take any risk. You know, and a lot of times people say, like somebody will sit down with $500,000 and say, Kevin, you know what? I want to take half of it. I want to make sure I keep that safe. So I don't care what happens. I don't want to lose a dime of half my money.
Sure.
The other half of my money, maybe we could take some risk. Maybe we do moderate risk, you know, not all stocks, maybe some stocks and bonds, you know? And so a lot of times that's how we'll split it up. But this is after the conversation that we have, guys. What we want to start off with, you know, we want to look at your assets and liabilities, and then we want to look at all of your income and all of your expenses, both before and after retirement. And depending on, you know, maybe you're already retired when we sit down, and so you'll know those numbers. And I want to make sure that you've got enough guaranteed income to cover all of your ongoing expenses. And that includes recreation, whether it's golf or travel or fishing or whatever, shopping, whatever it is you like to do for a hobby. I prefer to have all your expenses covered with guaranteed vehicles. So now that could be a Social Security. And we can get in. There's a whole nother conversation of whether you think that guarantee is solid or not.
Sure.
But that's a whole nother show.
Yeah, for now, though, it is.
Yes. So you could have a pension plan. Maybe you've got a pension plan. You know, but if you're like most of us and all you have is Social Security, then I'm going to suggest we do something else to give you some additional guaranteed income, right? So that we know you've got that money coming in regardless of what happens. Personally, I've talked about it before with me and my wife. I am using annuities for that aspect, for the income aspect, and I'm going to ladder them. So I'll have more than one policy so that I can turn on additional income over time. So every few years, I can start an additional source of income, and that's how we will be able to keep up with and stay ahead of inflation as time goes by, because we've all been reminded of inflation the last year, haven't we?
Oh, yes, we have.
So I think it's important that we segment and make sure you know all of these numbers, you know, assets, liabilities, income, expenses. Then we figure out how much risk you want to take, and how much liquidity you need, and that's how we can begin to put together a plan that'll help us accomplish these goals.
Well, and I think what we're doing is don't do anything drastically different right now.
No, I think it's a mistake. I think people
just
make a
stay
mistake.
Stay the course.
You should stay the course. Now, let me give you an asterisk though.
Yes,
that's with the qualification that you did put together a plan. Okay.
Aha. That's okay? Important.
You had a plan, all right? And you've implemented it, and that's what I'm saying, stay the course, okay? If you're just winging it, that's a totally different story, okay? If you've just been winging it and you really haven't had a specific plan, all right? That's a different situation. I don't know if staying the course is right or wrong. Okay. So if you've had a plan and you've implemented it and you've been executing that plan, chances are you're best off just staying with it, not making any changes.
All right. Sounds good. And as we sort of wind things up, any sort of summary or thoughts?
My summary would be is that assuming you have your income sources covered and you know you have sufficient income to meet your needs, and at the same time you have money in the stock market, then I would say to stay the course. Maybe give me a call so we can look over your portfolio, see where you have exposure to, because we want to make sure you're not too exposed to one area. A lot of people, pardon me, have too much money in technology, for instance. And tech can be great, but it's not always great. And so I want to make sure you're diversified. But I would say stay the course. Even if you're retired, I do think you should have money in stocks. Just make sure we've got the right ones.
Right. And again, it all starts with a phone call or an email to you, Kevin. Give them a call, 800-975-6717, or visit the website silverleaffinancial.com. Kevin, as always, I so appreciate our time and that to get your insight. And, you know, I'm scribbling notes as fast as you're talking.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Steve. It is always good being here, guys. I hope you found this information helpful. And please feel free to reach out. I'd be happy to have a conversation. And there's no cost, there's no obligation, but I've been happy answering questions.
Information provided is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. The covered material has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. There are risks associated with every type of investment vehicle. Please read the prospectus and risk disclosures thoroughly before investing. Insurance guarantees are subject to the insurance company's ability to pay. Neither Silverleaf Financial, Kevin Brooker, host, and guests are responsible for the usage of information discussed. Security and investment services offered through Silverleaf Financial, member SPINRA SIPC. Please consult with an experienced advisor before making any investment decisions.
Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.